Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hey everybody, welcome back to another edition of Bavarian Podcast Works. This is Chuck Smith and I'm here to bring you the weekend warm-up, BFW's weekly show where we hit on all of the latest and greatest news of the week. So much to talk about, so much going on around this team. Obviously, the biggest news of the week was Bayern Munich's performance against Arsenal in the Champions League. As I stated on the preview show ahead of Bayern's game against FC Köln in the Bundesliga, if you did not get a chance to check out our post-game show, which was hosted by I Need No Name and Seiler, definitely check that out. But I've got some thoughts on the match as well, and that's how we'll start off this show. Because for me, that match against Arsenal accomplished a couple of things. One, you came out of London tied 2-2. And that's a good thing because you're heading to the Allianz Arena where Bayern Munich should hold the advantage. Now, Arsenal is a very, very good team, very talented. They've got a lot going for them. However, what we got out of Bayern during that match was something we had not seen in the previous few weeks, and that was a pulse. They showed some life. They showed energy. They showed fight. They looked like a world-class football team. And that is something we have not seen for a couple of weeks now. It's something that we've only seen in bits and pieces this season. So it was really, to me, refreshing to see how well they played, how much they fought, and how hard they went after Arsenal. And this was a risk. It was a calculated risk to play so hard and not be so conservative, but they handled it really well. Thomas Tuchel, for all of the bashing that has been put upon him, and I'm one of the people that's been a big critic of him this season, came up with a great game plan. The players bought into it and they executed it. But why was Tuchel, after all of this season, so motivated? And I think it's pretty easy to think about it. One, he's got no job, right? This is it for him. He is finishing his season at Bayern Munich, and then that's it. He's got to go out and look for a new gig. So going out on the biggest stage in Europe, getting a team to play its best against a very powerful Arsenal team, it's a great look for Tuchel. Number two, he seems to really just have a bug for these English teams and wanting to beat them. And I'm sure that stems from his time coaching in the Premier League with Chelsea. So Tuchel was motivated for this, and that was key. But to me, the biggest thing was those players in the locker room rallying around themselves. And yes, they bought into what Tuchel was selling. They executed that game plan and they went out and performed. But I needed to see this team play like they were capable of playing. We just had not seen it enough this season. And I thought that they went out and they played up to their capabilities. It was not perfect. Not everything worked out. But you saw a team performance that lived up to the requisite talent level that was out on the pitch. There were some good things. There were some bad things. I liked the attacking mentality. I liked the aggression that Bayern Munich showed. They were not afraid to go at Arsenal. They were not afraid to risk those counterattacks, even though maybe they should have been. But that showed that they were willing to go out and trade punches. And I think, at least in the beginning of the match, that definitely affected Arsenal. Now, Arsenal did come out and they got the lead, but it was a very interesting scenario to watch what happened once Serge Gnabry scored his goal. In many ways, to me, it took Arsenal out of its game for a while. And I think it really affected their mentality. I mean, Gnabry came out 6 minutes after Bukayo Saka scored the first goal for Arsenal. Gnabry got Bayern on the board, and you could see and feel this momentum shift. And I felt like at that point, Bayern had really asserted themselves in taking control of the game, and which is, again, you wanted to see that. You needed to see it. You know, a little bit later, Harry Kane comes out. He gets the PK on the Leroy Sané foul that was drawn in the box, and Bayern was firmly in control. Now, of course, Arsenal did come back, and they tied the match in the second half. But we saw what we needed to see out of this. We saw a motivated, engaged Tuchel. We saw a team rallying around themselves, and we saw a high level of play. So those were all of the good things that we saw. Did I love every move that Tuchel made? No. I think Kingsley Coman at this point in his career is too inconsistent to be counted on. And I've been one of these people that I go back and forth on Coman because I see how good he can be at times and I see how disruptive he can be. But he just doesn't put it together. And if you look at Bayern's entire wing situation, that defines all three of them at this point. And I'm talking about Coman, Serge Gnabry, and Leroy Sané. They're just all so inconsistent. They're all a little bit prone to getting banged up. Coman and Gnabry have more extensive injury histories, I would say, than Sané. But Sané absolutely accumulates a lot of wear and tear, which affects his play as well. It's not an ideal situation when you have a striker like Harry Kane. And let's be honest, one of the reasons Bayern was successful is because this was one of the only times during the season that Kane's ability to drop back and be more of a facilitator and help with the build-up and contribute as more of a point guard at times, it's one of the only times it really worked that we saw Bayern take advantage of Kane's ability to do that. I've absolutely been someone who has pushed and pushed and pushed for Kane to be in the box, for Kane to be in front of the net, creating havoc. I give a lot of credit to Tuchel because he saw something in this Arsenal squad that was going to be advantageous for Bayern to take advantage of and using Kane in a way which I would prefer he not be used. So big credit to Tuchel for that. I have been a critic. I have been hard on Tuchel, and I think in a lot of ways Tuchel ruined this season with how he's treated players. But I will absolutely give the guy credit. I try and be fair about everything, and I think that's one of the things I try and pride myself on because I am very willing to give anybody kudos for a good job they do. But I'm also going to go out and criticize them if they're not doing a great job. And sometimes, yeah, maybe I'll push it a little bit too far being critical because sometimes there's accumulated frustration. And that's sort of how some of the comments I made about Sané, and I didn't think he had a good match against Arsenal. I still don't. I think he had a couple of tremendous moments, but overall just too many mistakes for me. But, you know, you could argue about that back and forth. And I respect everybody's argument that said, hey, those couple of moments he had defined the game for Bayern. I won't argue with that. But I see a guy who makes a ton of money, eats up a lot of the team's budget that way, and is just not consistent enough. And there's a lot of banter right now about all of these wings. Should Bayern keep Gnabry? Should they sell Coman, which is one of these stories that emerged this week. I mean, Coman is now allegedly on the block and Bayern would like 70 million for him. Do I think they'll get that? Hell no. Who's going to pay 70 million for Coman, a guy that's injured a lot and is inconsistent when he's on the pitch? But one thing to consider is that if you have these types of players, they are appealing to other clubs. You just probably won't get that high number that you think. But either way, these wings, for as inconsistent as they are, they hold a big key going into that second leg because you have Sané, who's still banged up. He has been held out of practice at least on Thursday at the time of this recording. You have Gnabry, who is out now because he's got a hamstring issue. So Tuchel, again, he's going to have to get creative. He's going to have to develop a game plan to attack Arsenal and give them something to look at that's a little different than last week. It's going to be interesting to see what he does to come out and how he tries to combat things and how he tries to push Bayern across the finish line here because it's doable now. I mean, it's a very tangible thing. They can win this tie, something that a lot of people did not expect them to do. So it's there. They can reach out and grab it if they want it. The biggest question is, can they hold it together for just a few more days? Can they avoid any more big injuries? Can they stay together as a team and stay focused? Can they buy into what Tuchel's going to be selling to them after that Köln match? I hope they can, because I think it's there. And listen, this season is going to go down as a lost one, no matter what happens in the Champions League. Even if Bayern wins it, there's so much animosity that has been built up. The team's going to change. Obviously, the coach is going to change. And fans have become a little bit apathetic this season. But now there's a chance to at least salvage something. Get something. End this on a good note. And yeah, listen, you're going to run into the next round and you're going to have to play Real Madrid or Man City. And it's probably not going to work out for you. Let's be honest. Bayern would not be the favorite against either of those teams. But give yourself that chance. Get past Arsenal. Hey, make a little bit more money in the process. And then put yourself in a position to at least challenge Madrid and Man City. Talent-wise, Bayern is right at the top of Europe. There are very few clubs that outdistance them in talent. Madrid and Man City happen to be two of them. So Bayern will be at a disadvantage there if they can get by Arsenal. But you want to be in that position. You want to have the opportunity to go out there and to show that you're one of the best clubs in Europe. And hell, even if it didn't work out domestically for you this year, you can still go out and prove you are a top club still in Europe, despite what many people think. So I was very encouraged about what I saw from Bayern Munich against Arsenal. I was happy with the result at 2-2. Sure, it would have been great to come out with a victory, but I'll take it. And, you know, listen, the handball that could have went that way, it's been another big discussion point between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. There will be no resolution on that. Nobody's going to convince anybody one way or the other. It's either you're stickler for the rules like I can be, or you think that you don't want to see something decided on a technicality like that. Either way, listen, Bayern has to go out and win it on the pitch against Arsenal on Tuesday. They, of course, do have to play Köln in between. So Tuchel's going to have to be creative with his lineups against Köln and balance who he wants to rest versus who he thinks needs to play and shake off some rust. I did misspeak in the preview show and reference Davies as a possible starter on Tuesday against Arsenal. We all know Davies will not be there because of yellow card accumulation. Sometimes when we're doing these shows, you get rolling and one of those little things slips by. It's even worse when you have notes in front of you and you choose to ignore it because your mind starts thinking big picture. So, hey, I made a little bit of a mistake on that one, but Rafael Guerrero, or maybe even Nusarmas Rally shifting over to the left side, somebody's going to have to be ready to take the pitch against Arsenal next week, which I believe is a Wednesday match. So really happy, really enthused about what I saw, feeling pretty confident about Bayern Munich heading home. Think if they can get out to a lead in that one, they are going to get by Arsenal, which will make things very, very interesting for fans. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to head over to the next segment, which we're going to discuss a couple of those big news stories that came out this week. One particularly about Alphonso Davies and Bild saying there are reports that he's become apathetic. One of the words of the show, I guess. Another about Dayo Upamecano being unhappy with his role as a bench player. And then we're going to dive into Joshua Kimmich's situation, which seems more and more likely that he's going to leave the club. But, you know, I guess I'll believe that when I see it. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. Appreciate you hanging in there. Of course, we started the show with Bayern Munich's big draw against Arsenal. It still feels like a win to me, damn it. Side note, I will always laugh 100% of the time at that old video of the guy. It's still real to me, damn it, guy. I love that video so much. So yeah, that draw felt like a win to me, damn it. Anyway, I will pop that video on after this show, after I record it, and I will just watch it just because it's one of the maybe top five unintentionally funny videos I've ever seen. But anyway, let's get down to talking about those big stories that emerged this week. And I do want to start with Alphonso Davies, because I don't want to say I've been an OG of the being skeptical about where Davies' career is heading, but I have been on this for a while. I haven't liked the way he's played. I don't like the way that there's been a lack of development. And it's a very complex thing for people to understand, because I'm being critical of him. But at the same time, I want Byron to keep him. I want to see if he can realize that mountain of potential that he has in Germany. I think he still can get there. And I've been saying this for months, maybe even a couple of years now. It's really just up to him whether he wants to get there or not. But this most recent story that came out by Bild, and I know when I say that, there's automatically people that are just like, it's Bild. But if you watch Davies this season, it's not, you know, you're not stupid if you think that, you know, him being described as indifferent or apathetic. I mean, these are things that he has shown those things on the field at times. So what Ibiza San Mia summarized Bild's report, how they did it, was according to Bild, everyone is wondering what's going on with Davies. Even his opponents. Most recently, even opponents were surprised at how indifferent Davies looked on the pitch and how little he cared about Byron's weak performances. The Canadian seemed rather apathetic and showed hardly any emotions on the pitch. I cannot disagree with that. It's one thing to talk about Davies' talent, because I do believe it's hit a roadblock. I don't know if it's because it's the way Byron has handled him. I don't know if it's personally, he doesn't want to put the work in, or maybe he's trying, but this is the best he can be. I don't know. And it's going to be impossible for anybody to really know that. We're not working out next to him every day. We're not hanging out with him at home, knowing his deepest, most innermost thoughts. We don't know what's going on with the guy. But what we can say is the energized, bright young kid that we saw come into Bayern Munich and really steal the hearts of many Bayern Munich fans, it's not there anymore. This is a guy who, indifferent being a great word for it, that's how he has looked. And it seems like that's how he's approached his development. He just hasn't gotten any better. He has the same flaws he had as a young kid that we could overlook them, because the theory was he was going to develop and fix those things, or at least improve upon those things. It hasn't happened. And I do believe that a kid like him, you know, he's, you know, obviously from North America, he's over in Germany and he's been there for quite a few years now, but you know, in a lot of ways, no matter who he has over with him or which friends he has there, he's still away from home. He's still adjusting. And it was a lot of responsibility on a young kid like that to try and go to a new country and manage that developmental pathway. And while he made some very good strides early on, I think he's had some personal stuff go down, which is, you know, we all know about breakups and things like that. But I think when you factor that in, you factor in he's got an agent pulling at him, meeting with other clubs. This is a very tumultuous period for Davies. He's trying to sort out what he wants to do with his future. And it's probably questionable whether he's mature enough to handle the situation. And I'm not meaning he's like an immature little brat or anything like that. It's a lot of weight on a player to have to dedicate and go all in for your current club if you're probably going to leave. I mean, there are a lot of things that affect the way you can play. And it's why in these instances, when you see a player so tightly tied to another club at this stage, you often see more benchings. You often might see them be replaced. And I think Davies is struggling a little bit with that, because not only does he probably have something in his head that has moved on to Madrid. Listen, nothing's official, but I think we're all kind of looking at that situation and saying he's probably going there. But he also probably has something in his head saying, hey, I don't want to get hurt before I go to Madrid. I don't want to cost myself the money that's waiting for me in that contract. And these are all legitimate thoughts for a player to have that would possibly affect you. I worry that Davies has kind of checked out. And it's difficult for fans to process, because everybody wants to be optimistic. They want to assume that he's going to eventually work out a deal and stay with Bayern, and he's going to be a lifer. And then he's going to improve upon all these little faults that he has and become this world star left back that we all know he can be. I don't know if Davies is ever going to get there. At 23, I certainly wouldn't count him out, but he has to make the decision on whether or not he wants to be that kind of player, whether he wants to achieve that level of stardom and fame that he could. But it comes at a price, and that price is dedication. It's a lot of self-work. It's a lot of film work. It's a lot of studying yourself, knowing yourself, improving yourself. I mean, he has gotten away with a lot over the course of his career because he's got blinding speed. So I get it. When you have that tool in your belt, it takes away a lot of the problems because you can fix them with it. But then eventually you get to the point where maybe you're not as fast. And I'm not saying he's lost a step or anything, but he's going to eventually lose a step. And then he's going to have to know the game better and understand his opponents better and then really put in the time to become a player that doesn't just rely on the foot speed or his ability to be a two-way attacking type left back. He's going to have to evolve as a player. And it's fair to wonder if he's going to get there given how the past few years have went. It'd be one thing if this was the first season where he kind of slumped off, given everything that's going on with a possible transfer. It'd be one thing if it was just that. But it's been about 2.5 years now where the kid really hasn't made any progress. And you know, I'll say it a million times, I won't count him out because I think he can get there. The only thing we can never be sure of is if he really wants to put the work in to do it. And he's going to have to get to a point where he understands the commitment that happens in the off season, the commitment that happens during the season off the pitch, that things you need to do when you're not at the training facility. I don't know if he's there. He seems like a fun-loving kid who wants to enjoy life. I get it. I totally get it. Who wouldn't love to live that way? But he's going to have to make a decision at some point because he's got the ability to get there. He's got to decide where he wants to try and get there, and two, if he wants to put in all of the work and all of the time that it requires to do so. I just don't know. And if you're having doubts like I'm having, and maybe Bayern is having some doubts as well, it's a situation where you might not want to invest. And Max Eberl, in the same build piece, had this to say: Fonzi has had his problems with Saka at the beginning, but other defenders have had that too. In the second half, Fonzi was much more stable. Of course, Eberl was talking about the two halves of Bayern Munich's game against Arsenal. And Davies was a mess in the first half. And he did indeed pick up his performance in the second half, which is why I have the stance I have with him. Because you can see he can do things when he wants to do them. But does he want to make the step and put in the extra work to be more consistent with all of that? And I don't know. And I think that's the internal fight that Bayern Munich is having right now. You obviously would love to be able to pay Davies $20 million, but it does upset your payroll budget. It is a lot to pay for a left back, admittedly. And it's a lot to pay for someone who really hasn't made much progress in terms of helping his game get better in a couple of years now. So Bayern has big decisions to make on Davies. Real Madrid, if you look at some of the recent stories coming out of there, Carlo Ancelotti reportedly doesn't even want Davies. So, I mean, I don't know. I still kind of think that deal's already worked out and this is a lot of posturing coming from Madrid. But if you're watching Davies play over the last couple of weeks, or if you just watch them play this whole season, you're probably not thinking like this is a kid we need to go out and pay mega bucks to. One of the other big stories that I saw out there, and you knew this was coming, it was either going to be about Kim Min-jae or Dayo Upamecano, but the Frenchman, Upamecano, is not happy with his role as a bench player. We all saw this coming. When Thomas Tuchel opted to go with Matthijs de Ligt and Eric Dier as his choice center backs, and it has worked out well. I mean, you can't argue with the results, really, especially considering that Kim Min-jae and Upamecano played last weekend against Heidenheim and were atrocious. You can't really argue with what Tuchel has done. Upamecano, though, seems unhappy and isn't sure about his future now at Bayern Munich. It's a very tough situation for me because I think about what Tuchel established early this season, that he wasn't going to rotate, even though he had three excellent center back options. He was going to ride Upamecano and Kim Min-jae. And aside of wearing them down and putting a whole hell of a lot of wear and tear on their bodies, which eventually affected them and now has put them both on the bench, you have the situation where you got them used to playing all the time, where it became expected. Well, now their form went and they're not playing all the time. And now Tuchel's in a position where he can't really rotate because he doesn't trust them. So you've got a coach who set these two players up with unrealistic expectations that he never should have set them up in. And people always counter me when I talk about a center back rotation and they say, well, what other good clubs use a rotation at center back? I don't really care about other clubs, because if other clubs have three great center backs, which I believe Bayern Munich does, then maybe they would rotate their players a little bit more. And that's where I think that Tuchel, again, of all the things he's done this season, and I'm not going to turn this into trash Thomas Tuchel time, but I think he could have handled that situation with a rotation better. I think it would have been best for all three players. It would have established a true partnership among the three so that they could support each other, so that they would be able to help one develop relationships within the three of them. And then two, be able to be in a position where you could interchange them by this point in the season and you'd be comfortable with no matter what the combination was. It didn't happen. Tuchel opted to go a different route with that. He benched De Ligt. I know people go back and say, well, De Ligt was hurt a lot. He was. But when he was healthy, he wasn't being used either. And we had heard as far back as Bayern's training camp, preseason training camp, about how Tuchel didn't like the way De Ligt passed and his ability to get the ball up the field. Whatever the case, De Ligt was coming off being arguably the club's best player for the entire season last year. And then all of a sudden he had all of these game-changing faults that the coach couldn't live with. Whatever. Tuchel made a million missteps. How he handled the center backs was one, but he's not going to have to be here to deal with the fallout of Upamecano potentially wanting to leave. Tuchel's out of here. So now Bayern Munich has another headache potentially on its hands if Upamecano does want to leave. Because if you're Bayern Munich, you know you need three top flight center backs, and you need someone who's going to be able to manage them properly, to keep them healthy, to develop relationships, improve communications on the back line, and just provide yourself with the necessary backup that you probably need over the course of a long season. It's very rare that two center backs are going to be able to make it all the way through and be healthy the entire time. So having a third starting quality option that you can rotate and help with maintenance of all of the three center backs, I think it's very key. And the fact that Dyer has come in and proven that he's at least capable, he can come in and be another guy that you don't have to play as much as the other three next year, but you can mix him in and be pretty confident he's going to give you a solid showing. Now, I thought he was good against Arsenal defensively at times. Thought he did some good things. I think his passing was nowhere near as good as it has been prior to that game, but it's more than just about his passing or anything statistical. It's having De Ligt and Dyer together on the back line has given them a strong backbone and foundation for the squad. So we could sit here and pick apart Dyer, but what he's done in conjunction with De Ligt has given this team stability, and it was stability that they desperately needed. So what happens with Upamecano, I don't know. I think that he probably will, depending on the next coach, at least explore the options that are out there for him, because, you know, if the next coach that comes in isn't going to guarantee him starting minutes, it might be a situation where he might not want to stick around. And you could have that with all three of the center backs, honestly. Kim Min-jae right now is being a good soldier about things. Maybe he has some self-realization that his play hasn't been at its best this season. Or maybe he just doesn't want to cause a stink during a Champions League run here. I don't know. But De Ligt earlier was criticized by Tuchel, and De Ligt deflected it right back on Tuchel and said it's the coach's decision. So, listen, all three of those center backs are all capable of being starters elsewhere, and all three will probably find their names in the transfer rumor mill this summer, because depending on who the coach is will probably determine whether one or two of those players eventually leaves Bayern Munich. Finally, on the news front, Joshua Kimmich. This has been an ongoing thing over the past couple of weeks. It seems like his status with the club is more in jeopardy now than it ever has been. Kimmich, of course, has been very reluctant and hesitant to do anything or commit to anything when it in terms of playing for the club next season. He wants to get through this campaign, probably get through Euros, and then he'll be willing to talk about it. It's been a red flag for Bayern Munich so far. We are seeing that Bayern is definitely a little bit wary about what's going on. And this is what Bild journalist Toby Altschaffel had to say as it was captured by Aimia Sanmia on this situation. Some of the people in charge internally see Joshua Kimmich's hesitation about his future and his lack of fundamental commitment to Bayern as a negative. If Kimmich wants to extend, he will have to be ready to take a pay cut on his currently estimated 20 million euro per year salary. The same applies to Leroy Sané, who is in a similar salary category to Kimmich. From Sané's camp, however, there's a general willingness to extend at Bayern on lower terms. A decision before the Euros is being considered. So with Kimmich, you got a couple of things at play here. His position is now uncertain. We don't know if the next coach coming in will see him as a midfielder or a right back. We also sort of know that Kimmich doesn't really want to play right back and would like to return eventually to the central midfield. So you have that. You don't know where the next coach will see him or if the next coach will want him. And then you have the salary factor where you're going to ask Kimmich to take a pay cut in his next salary, which at the age he would be, I believe he'll be 30 at the time when they really need to negotiate a new deal. 20 million for what Kimmich does, probably a little bit high for a German pay scale. I don't know how this situation goes. I am very skeptical that Kimmich actually wants to leave Bayern Munich. I think that the relationship he has with Tuchel has not been great. And I think that that has affected how Kimmich feels about the club. If I had to dig into Kimmich's head, I would say that he probably feels like the club left him unprotected, that the club didn't shield him from some of the things that Tuchel said and did. And I think Kimmich, knowing Kimmich, is probably put off a little bit by how everything has shaken out. I would bet money on that. Like, that's how I legitimately think Kimmich feels right now based on the situation. But asking Kimmich to take a pay cut, I think, is fair for Bayern Munich. And I think that it absolutely is something that should be on the table because the club does need to right size its budget. It does need to figure out how to best move forward. And Kimmich really might not be a part of those plans. So even if they want to keep him around to be some kind of, even if he's a starter or he's a versatile guy, they want to swing between positions, whatever, paying 20 million for that is probably not going to happen. So Kimmich's going to have some difficult choices. If you believe some of the Spanish news sources, he's already agreed to a deal with Arsenal. I don't know that we can go that far yet, but Kimmich definitely will have his options. He will definitely be thinking about things probably after Euros, and whoever the new coach is either going to have to convince Kimmich he's got an important role for the future, even at a lesser salary, and they're going to have to convince him why he should stay, because I think he's going to have his options. I still kind of feel like Pep Guardiola is going to want to bring Kimmich to Man City and unleash him there in some kind of hybrid versatile role where he's more free-flowing and doesn't really have a position. If I'm going to go out on a limb, I'm going to say that's what's going to happen, that Kimmich's going to make that jump to City and he's not even going to have a position. He's going to play a roaming type spot where Pep just determines week to week where Kimmich needs to be on the pitch. I sort of see that as being the most likely scenario. I'd like to keep Kimmich. I'm not as down on him as many other people are. I think he can still play a big role for Bayern Munich moving forward. And given his popularity in the locker room and how he is that keystone player that unites the old and the young, I think you need him in a lot of ways. So as petulant and as moody as he might seem or how he might be portrayed by the media, I think he's immensely popular in that locker room and Bayern Munich needs him. We're going to take a quick break and then I am going to give you a quick rundown of what I thought about Curb Your Enthusiasm season, or actually series finale, which if you know me, you probably can guess how I feel about it. Hang with us. We'll be right back.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Weekend Warm-Up Show. I know not everyone's a huge fan of the entertainment rundown that we do here, but I like to give it anyway because it is something that does spark some discussion, and I like hearing the feedback from people on what they felt about things. And this is obviously a pretty massive event in terms of television because it was the Curb Your Enthusiasm series finale. And for a lot of people, the series finale is so important to the legacy of a show because you can have 20 great seasons. If you go out on a lame note, it leaves everyone with a sour taste. You could be like Game of Thrones and really pack it in for the last season and a half or two seasons and throw out some real trash at the end that ruins your entire legacy. Or you could be like Breaking Bad, which actually hit its peak at its finale. So it can go a lot of different ways. And when most people think about finales, they think about how Seinfeld really choked up at the end and they did not do a good job. So what did Larry David do? Someone who worked on that Seinfeld finale, he rolled it right back and used the same exact format, except this time he hit it out of the park. The entire episode was really well done because you got what you knew what you were going to get. A lot of awkward situations for Larry, a lot of uncomfortable conversations, and just Larry in general being a jerk that people can't stand. You knew you were going to get that because that's what you get in every Curb episode, and it has worked forever, so why break it? But what you didn't know you were going to get is the flashbacks that worked in terms of characters from the past coming back and telling about their interactions with Larry, some of the old storylines being brought up in the courtroom scenes. You had a lot of that stuff. And in so many cases, it might not work for other shows, but it worked perfectly here. And this is something I theorized all season. I mean, from the very get-go, I just had this feeling that Larry David was going to run back that Seinfeld finale. Knowing Larry over the years, how he's talked about the show, how he's been on the show, it's just something that was so evident to me that he was going to take another shot at making it right and convincing people that this was a good way to end a show. And he pulled it off perfectly. It was the perfect ending. The irony, of course, is that Larry does go to jail, but instead of him rotting in there like we saw the Seinfeld characters do, they were stuck in jail at the end of that finale. Larry's bailed out on a technicality by his rich friend, Jerry Seinfeld, who happened to see one of the sequestered jurors out and about, which then made the case. I don't know the legal term for it, although I should since my sister is a lawyer. Whatever it is, they threw it out. So Larry was able to leave with Seinfeld. And of course, the closing scene was Larry, Leon, Jeff, Susie, Cheryl, Ted. They were all together on a plane and all arguing, which is, again, really the icing on the cake. You went out, you did everything so good. And I guess Lewis was in that scene. Richard Lewis was in that scene as well. But I thought it was just so well done. The perfect way to end that show. It hit a home run in every sense of the word. Episode was a 5 out of 5. Series finale, the entire final season, I would probably say was a strong 4.5 out of 5, maybe a 4.75 based on the strength of that series finale. But you know, it started out, I didn't like the first episode, but it got better and there were a couple of down moments, but you can't argue with how it was handled. It was just perfectly done. So kudos to Larry David. That was a great show, one of the best comedies of all time. I that is a hill I will die on. It made me laugh consistently for years through a couple of different eras, through a lot of different social changes. But Larry was always inappropriate, always abrasive, and always getting himself into more trouble. And I loved every second of it. So if you have not checked it out yet, sorry if I spoiled it for you, but you absolutely should. And even if you have not checked out Curb in general, it might be something you want to start to binge watch because you can rip through the episodes very, very quickly. That will about wrap it up for this episode of the Weekend Warm-Up Show. Appreciate everybody for listening. Of course, at BavarianFootballWorks.com, we will have all of the coverage of Bayern Munich versus Köln this weekend and also the Champions League match against Arsenal next week. So get all of your news leading up to those games and all of our great game coverage at BFW. It's nothing we like more than bringing you guys the news and commentary on stuff like that. As always, you can get me at the Barrel Blog on Twitter. You can get the site at Bavarian FB Works. You can get this podcast at Bavarian Podcast. You can get I Need No Name at BFWINNN. You can get Tom Adams at TommyAdams71. You can get Siler at BFW Siler. And as I always say, you can get all of our great and wonderful writers and podcasters at BavarianFootballWorks.com. They do such a good job there. So keep hitting that up. We appreciate all the support that you guys give us. Have a couple of beers on me. Enjoy your weekend. We'll see you next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.